Watch the face of our guest today as I read the following quotation. President Barack Obama speaking in 2009, quote, "I believe in American exceptionalism, just as I suspect that the Brits believe in British exceptionalism and the Greeks believe in Greek exceptionalism." Today on Uncommon Knowledge, radio host and author Dennis Prager. Uncommon Knowledge, now. Welcome to Uncommon Knowledge. I'm Peter Robinson. Be sure to visit us on our website at hoover.org/UK or on Facebook at facebook.com/UNCKnowledge. Facebook.com/UNCKknowledge. Host of the Dennis Prager Radio Show, columnist, lecturer, and best-selling author, Dennis Prager grew up in Brooklyn, graduated from Brooklyn College and Columbia University, and then became a Westerner, moving to California and starting his radio career in Los Angeles in 1982. Dennis Prager's new book, Still the Best Hope, Why the World Needs American Values to Triumph. Dennis, welcome to Uncommon Knowledge.
Peter, it's actually an honor. Thank you. It is.
Well, then we're both honored.
Okay, that's fair.
The United States of America, no more exceptional on President Obama's account than Britain or Greece. What do you make of that?
That is exactly what the left believes. In fact, the notion of American exceptionalism is regarded by the left, and I want to explain why I use the word the left, as quasi-fascistic, chauvinistic, if not actually racist, and xenophobic and all the other terms. And the reason I mention the left is that the book is about three alternate ideas for humanity. There are really only three in competition. And they are leftism, Islamism, and Americanism. Two of them proselytize. One not only doesn't proselytize, it doesn't even know what it stands for, and that's why I wrote the book.
All right. Still the best hope. I have written this book because I am convinced that there is a way to end most evil. Mm-hmm. Not, I have written this book because I seek an American renaissance, because I seek to repair the damaged fabric of our country, because I am convinced there is a way to end most evil. The only answer to making a better world is the American value system.
That's right.
Explain that, Dennis.
Since I was a child, I've been preoccupied with evil. I have no explanation for it, and I mean it, I have none. It's as if a child were to respond to hearing a cello and said, Mommy, I want to play cello. They have no explanation. Mine was, Mommy or Daddy or whomever, I want to reduce evil. I am as corny as that. I have been my whole life. That's what preoccupies me. I just, on the way here, I read an article about a 10-year-old girl in Pakistan who had sulfuric acid thrown in her face because of anger of a man toward her mother. And I want acid thrown in his face. I was actually thinking of raising funds to get the girl to America for surgery. She's lost much of her face, and to hire people to throw it in his face. I mean, I'm really, that's how passionate I am about evil.
Dennis, growing up in Brooklyn, 60s and 70s, wasn't it hearing people talk about the Holocaust?
The Holocaust was the trigger.
That must have been the background.
It was the trigger, because I remember when it first hit me, I was about 8, 9 years old, right, watching 20th Century with Walter Cronkite. Hitler came on, and I said to my parents, "Who's that?" He said he was a very bad man. He killed 6 million Jews. And I couldn't believe it. Mm. I could, what? You know, they said it matter-of-factly. I mean, what are they going to say? You know, fall on the floor?
Right.
But I somebody did that? By the way, being Jewish was a factor, but not the primary factor. Somebody killed 6 million of somebody? I went to Cambodia 2 years ago just to visit the killing fields. I feel a responsibility to visit everybody's genocide. I mean, I'm very serious about this issue. Anyway, as I write in the book, evil is normal, America is abnormal. That's my view. We have created something here which is unique and remarkable.
Deeply exceptional.
deeply exceptional. It's and it can't be race-based because there's no American race.
Right.
So it's a non-issue. It's idea-based, but Americans don't know that idea, let alone non-Americans. And so that's the reason. And I could, you want the idea in one sentence?
Sure.
It's what I call the American Trinity. It's on every coin, and I didn't realize it till 20 years ago, emptying my pockets one night. Liberty and God we trust, e pluribus unum. The greatest threesome for making a good world ever created.
Once again, still the best hope. You mentioned, as you mentioned earlier, you describe in the book three ideologies. We'll come to each of the three: leftism, Islam, and American values, the American Trinity. Quote, these three ideologies are incompatible. Any one of them succeeds at the expense of the other two. All Islamists know this, and many leftists know this, but most of those holding American values do not. All right, two propositions there. Anyone succeeds only at the expense of the other two. Necessarily so. Why is that?
Well, let's take the left. Leftism, which is the most dynamic religion in the world in the last century. Leftism is the antithesis of Americanism in many ways. Instead of liberty, it prefers material equality. That is its great aim, and it's prepared to sacrifice liberty on the altar of equality. That's why leftists were so taken with Fidel Castro, and still are. After all, they may not have liberty in Cuba, but they have equality.
Right.
Number two, in God we trust. If people have liberty, and this is key, since people are not basically good, and the founding fathers all knew this, as the entire Judeo-Christian tradition has known this, only the men of the Enlightenment and modern progressives believe people are basically good, but the rest of us live on in the real world and know that we're not. And so how do you have liberty and goodness? Only if people fear God in the deepest sense of the word, that they have reverence for a God that makes moral demands. That is what In God We Trust is about.
And people who hold those beliefs don't understand that they are necessarily engaged in a competition.
That's
a global
right.
competition.
Well, that's right. They don't understand
because
that.
They grow
the
up,
left no, the left does.
The left does.
Americans don't. I don't mean Americans. There are American leftists who love America, and I want to make that clear.
Right.
This is not anti-people, it's anti-ideas. But no, the left does know that. That's why the world's left can't stand America. The world's left knows that if America prospers, leftism doesn't. This is the most religious democracy in the world, or certainly of the industrialized democracies. It is the free enterprise capitalist democracy, and it is e pluribus unum, not UN, not transnational, but we affirm nationalism. So we are the antithesis of leftism.
All right. Segment two, on to leftism. A quotation and a clip, Dennis. The quotation from Still the Best Hope. Quote, for the left, politics is the way to transform the world. Close quote. The clip, President Obama's commencement address at Barnard earlier this spring.
Mm-hmm. So don't accept somebody else's construction of the way things ought to be. It's up to you to right wrongs. It's up to you to point out injustice. It's up to you to hold the system accountable and sometimes upend it entirely. It's up to you to stand up and to be heard, to write and to lobby, to march, to organize, to vote.
That's his religion.
So that sounds very noble, right? Right? Right. Lobby, organize,
upend
vote?
Upend the whole system? I told my listeners on my radio show before he was elected, I said, the reason I cannot vote for him was just articulated because he said, I want to fundamentally transform the United States of America. I don't. I want to improve the United States of America. I don't wish to fundamentally transform it. Can you imagine if your wife said to you, or said to somebody else, you know, I'd like to fundamentally transform Peter. I know your wife wants to improve you. That's what wives are for. But fundamentally transform, that's very different. But this is utopia on earth, utopia now. Politics is their religion.
All right. Once again, a quotation and a clip, and again the quotation from Still the Best Hope. Quote, the left argues that almost all social programs can be solved by the state taxing its citizens as much as possible. Well, that sounds pretty provocative, but listen to this clip, which is Massachusetts Democratic candidate for the United States Senate, Harvard professor Elizabeth Warren.
Nobody in this country who got rich on his own. Nobody. You built a factory out there, good for you, but I want to be clear, you moved your goods to market on the roads the rest of us paid for.
Yep.
You hired workers the rest of us paid to educate. You were safe in your factory because of police forces and fire forces that the rest of us paid for.
Dennis, behind every brilliant individual, behind every entrepreneurial success, you will find the collective, you will find a large expenditure of tax money. Where would Dennis Prager and his radio program be without the Federal Communications Committee?
Boy, is that ever true? Commission. I mean, you think of it, the roads that got me to my studio, I mean, it's endless. Rules that governed the restaurant I had breakfast in, I never thought of it that way. However, don't those rules and benefits apply to everybody? So it doesn't explain why some do more than others. People who watch television 6 hours a day also get their roads paid for, also had all of these things, but somehow they didn't contribute to society. So it's a non sequitur, her whole point. But yes, the big government is the ideal, the state. And we on the left will use the state to tell you how to live because we simply know better.
Okay. Next question about the left. The people we've just been criticizing are the President of the United States and a very influential Harvard professor who now has a good shot at being elected to the United States Senate. Leftism wins votes. It has an abiding appeal in this country. You talk in this book about progressivism beginning all the way back in the first decade and two decades of the last century. Why is it the case that there is a permanent appeal why does the left appeal so permanently and so deeply to Americans?
Well, there are many reasons for it, and it's a huge chapter why the left succeeds. But in a nutshell, sadly, most people prefer security to liberty. They rather be taken care of and make a Mephistophelian deal. I will give you a lot of my dignity and a lot of my liberty. You give me security. You make sure that I am taken care of, and all I have to worry about is where I travel this year. That's the European view. And that is the view that the left would like to have, that your only worry really is, where will I travel this year? What museum will I visit? This from Karl Marx. Ideally, people will be freed from labor and they will write poetry.
So what you're saying, this is just occurring to me for the first moment, so I may misstate it, but what you're saying, I think it's in the Legend of the Grand Inquisitor. It's in Dostoevsky, isn't it? Freedom is a burden.
The Grand
Inquisitor in this scene between the Grand Inquisitor
and
Christ. That freedom is a burden.
People don't
want freedom.
Yes.
So you're not saying that American values are best because, and they come natural, they're hard. It is hard
when
to live them.
When the Jews left Egypt within months, they were saying, let's go back. At least we ate well.
Right. Right. Segment three, Islam. Still the best hope. Quote.
Islamism, to be precise.
Islamism. Thank you. Still the best hope. I'm quoting you now, Dennis. Every religion, every culture, every ethnic group, and every nation has engaged in violence. Yet among major world religions, Islam has stood out. Close quote.
Right.
Explain.
Well, it has. There are certain things in life that are matters of opinion.
Right.
I think this candidate will do better. You think that candidate will do better. I prefer this car. You prefer that car. Then there are facts. Either what I wrote is true or it isn't true. So it's not a tough call. Islam has been violent from its onset. Does that mean that it will always be? No. In fact, I have a very deep belief, and I write it in the book, that Islam can be reformed. that you don't have to give up Islam, you don't have to give up belief in Muhammad and the Quran in order to be a great person and to be and to indeed adopt Americanist values. Zudi Jasser, a religious Muslim physician in Arizona, is one of my models. I use him as an example, who accepts the American Trinity alongside with his deeply held Islam.
But he's an innovator within the religion
that
as
is
it
correct,
has come to
yes.
us historically.
Well, look, I'll give you the proof.
Right.
The greatest Arab Muslim writer in history, according to all outsiders and probably all Arabs, certainly, was Ibn Khaldun, who wrote an introduction to history about 900 years ago. And he wrote that jihad, that is violent war to spread Islam, is incumbent upon every Muslim. And here's the kicker, and I have the exact citation in the book. We are greater than Jews and Christians because they don't believe you should kill in the name of God to spread their religion, but we do.
Once again, still the best hope. Quote, no part of the Muslim world is as steeped in Islam as is the Arab. Why then has the Arab world, which has been Muslim longer than any other part of the Muslim world, been the least free? Close
yeah.
quote.
Yeah. I mean, that's a question that needs to be answered. It's because liberty is not a Muslim value. Sharia is. And I don't hold this against Muslims. That's just the way it is. The Sharia's purpose is not liberty. And I have an example in there which I am so happy to tell you. And so happy, and this is where my talk show has given me so much information that you can't have just as, let's say, a scholar.
People call you. They argue. They tell
well,
you stuff.
Yes, they do. But listen, and okay. I learn from them. Right. This one you will love. I was talking about Somali taxi drivers in Minnesota. I'm in Minnesota very often, and I know how this is true, that many of the taxi drivers at the airport are religious Muslims from Somalia. That's where they right. went to, Minnesota. Not for the weather, I assure you, but that's where they ended up. Many of them have simply said, we will not take passengers who have alcohol or who bring a dog into the taxi. Dog is considered impure by many Muslims, and alcohol is banned in Islam.
Right.
A Christian mailman from Denver called my show, and he said, I just want to say, Dennis, I want to draw a contrast here that you might find of interest. I am an evangelical Christian mailman, and I deliver pornography to people who subscribe to it through the mail. I am at least as opposed as a Christian to pornography as Muslims are to alcohol or to dogs. But because of liberty, and my belief is an American Christian in liberty, I deliver the pornography.
Islamic scholar Bernard Lewis, here's a longish quotation, but I want to know what you make of it. Quote, Islam has brought comfort and peace of mind to countless millions of men and women. It has given dignity and meaning to drab and impoverished lives. It inspired a great civilization. But Islam, like other religions, has also known periods when it inspired in some of its followers a mood of hatred and violence. It is our misfortune that part, though by no means all or even most of the Muslim world, is now going through such a period. Close quote. A great religion and civilization that is now evidencing an unfortunate but temporary and minority or aberrant strain. So we're not in permanent competition with Islam as a religion or a civilization. It's just, well, you use the word yourself, Islamism. It's
yes,
temporary.
And I define
it's
Islamism.
So that's your view as well?
Yes. Remember, though, Islamism, as I define it, is the desire to have a Sharia-based state and to spread the Sharia to as many places in the world as possible.
That's not aberrant, and that's not temporary.
That's the problem. And I think that Bernard Lewis would agree.
All right. A brief clip. This is the late Anwar al-Awlaki, who was born in the United States, which made him an American citizen, lived here to the age of 7, and then returned to the United States for college. Anwar al-Awlaki.
Muslims in America, I have this to say. How can your conscience allow you to live in peaceful coexistence with a nation that is responsible for the tyranny and crimes committed against your own brothers and sisters? How can you have your loyalty to a government that is leading the war against Islam and Muslims?
Place him. A crank?
He's a, and the American...
Or a representative of something very dangerous to us that we ought to be expecting to fight for a long time to come.
Both. He's a crank. In the American Muslim context, the vast majority of Muslims in America accept the American value system. That's the good news. It's the problem is far more among the Islamists in Europe and groups like CARE in the United States.
CARE is the...
Council on American Islamic Relations.
Right.
Who, for whatever reason, the press ordained as spokespeople for American Muslims. But the average American Muslim has as little in common with this guy as I do.
Got it. Segment four, American values. Still the best hope. The value system that is unique to America can be called the American Trinity. You've already explained this on the coin. Liberty.
Yes.
In God we trust, e pluribus unum. All right. Liberty. Quote, the larger the state, the less its citizens feel needed, and therefore the less they, especially men, feel significant. Close quote. Now, here's what I find fascinating about that sentence and the argument that you make. Obviously, I'm reducing. Somebody once said that doing television about a book is reducing an ox to a bouillon cube. But the Federalist, the authors of the Federalist Paper, Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, argued in favor of liberty, the ordered liberty in the Constitution, because they were seeking a way to permit people to live together. The 13 states to function as a nation. You've got, in our own time, economists, Milton Friedman and Gary Becker, they argue for liberty because it leads to prosperity. Markets can function. Markets are the best way of solving material problems. You argue for liberty somehow or other because you're interested in, you're almost Oprah Winfrey, Dana. You're interested in fulfillment. You want people to seek to find meaning in their lives. The larger the state, the less its citizens feel needed.
That's right.
And therefore, especially men, they don't feel significant. Is that
yes.
what you're talking about, the best way to personal fulfillment, aren't
That's
you?
That's right. Yes, I am. The more the state does, the less I have to do. It's just as simple as that. If I don't take care of my parents, don't take care of my kids, don't take care of myself, don't take care of my community, what do I do? And the answer is, look at what happens in Europe. Your big concerns are, where do I dine out? How early can I retire so I can travel more? It's never, how can I do more good? And on a macro level in Europe, look at the way Europe has withdrawn from the world. It is the United States that has protected liberty in the world since World War II, not Europeans.
And you're saying that that is bad for people. It's especially bad for men.
Yes. Men derive purpose from conquering the world. If the state conquers the world, what's for them to do? And that's why you have bands of English youth going onto the continent and peeing in fountains that in Italy and elsewhere. It's notorious by now. You have a bored European youth, and I worry. Boredom is a terrible indicator of bad futures.
The second item in the American Trinity, in God we trust, still the best hope. I'm quoting again. The founders substituted God for a powerful secular or religious state, and they tied liberty to God. They tied liberty
yes.
to God. Now explain that, Dennis.
It's ingenious. It's the system. That's why I say it's the best in the world. The notion that the state or even religion was primarily concerned with liberty, this was almost entirely an American invention, and certainly became associated with the United States. Look, even within Judaism and Christianity, they took a verse, the founders, from the Bible, specifically the Old Testament, specifically the Torah, the first five books to be on the
Liberty
Bell.
Right. Proclaim liberty to all the land and the inhabitants thereof. Leviticus,
yes,
as I recall.
Yes,
right?
Very good.
That's because I did a radio show with you last week, Dennis.
That's very humble.
I looked it up.
It's even better than good. It was just
all
so
right.
honest. But this notion of tying God wants liberty, that's what the mailman was saying. God wants liberty even more than he wants me to not deliver the pornography to these people who ordered it. This is a unique invention in the world. God cares that we're free.
But you're not saying that they invented a new religion. You're saying that this is a
right.
That this is a deep expression of something that's within Judaism and that's within Christianity.
But it needed, it did something, and this I did not write. I don't know if I wrote it, and I can't say I didn't. All right, now this is the interesting part, and specifically, very interesting part. It really took the best of the two religions. It took the Old Testament for its values, and it took the Christian universalization of those values, because the Jews are a people,
yes, right,
not
right.
Just a religion, and Christianity is a religion and not a people. So it's said, we'll take these magnificent values, we Christians, we'll take the magnificent values of the Hebrew Bible, but we will universalize them. And so whereas the Jews had been preoccupied with Jewish law and Jewish observance and Jewish survival and were more inward directed for much of Jewish history, the Christians now said, no, we are going to make a society based on these divinely based values. And that mixture is awesome.
And this is why, in particular, you object to lawbreaking of any kind. But you're not one of the conservatives who's bothered by immigration, by a growing proportion of the population.
I'm bothered by the non-assimilation.
Right, right.
I'm bothered by
But you're
by
saying
that.
These values are genuinely
oh,
universal.
If that's the... You see, it,
this won't
Bill Bennett said... He had a great line. He said, I am not worried about what immigrants will do to America. I'm worried about what America will do to the immigrants. Right. We have to, if we knew what we stood for and taught these people.
Right.
You know what? I have a message to all Hispanics in America, all Latinos in America. Why would you want to replicate what you left? Right. That's what happens when you vote for the Democratic Party.
Right. Dennis, you argue that religion is essential to the virtues, the fundamental sense of morality required in a democracy. Will you tell me what to make of the following clip? This is my late friend, Christopher Hitchens, on this very program, seated, in fact, at that seat. Here's an exchange with Christopher. If Christopher Hitchens doesn't believe in God, reviewers have asked, then where does he get his sense of right and wrong? You have replied, in print, that this question is in itself insulting, and you have rejected, quote, the appalling insinuation that I would not know right from wrong if I was not supernaturally guided, close quote. Why do you find it insulting?
Because I think it's degrading to the human, to us, to you and me, to imply, well, not to imply, to state directly that absent a celestial dictatorship that had some supernatural influence over us, yet to be established, by the way, as anything really existent, but without the assumption of it, we wouldn't know right from wrong. We wouldn't return stolen property if we found it in the back of a cab. We wouldn't give blood if someone badly needed a transfusion, unless we were afraid either of reward, either of punishment or desirous of a reward, that we might help ourselves to underage children, as some religious people have actually been known to do. Because, after all, what's stopping us? Now, you could tell me if you wanted that you would do all those things if you weren't God-fearing, but I would choose not to believe you. I have more respect for you, if not for your opinions, than that.
You don't need religion to be virtuous.
No, you don't.
You don't. You grant him that.
No, of course.
He was right about all that.
No, he was not right about all of that. Because he didn't deal with the larger question, is there right and wrong if there is no God? There were people who believed the earth rested on the back of a giant turtle who did right and wrong, who knew right and wrong. The scriptures that Jews and Christians believe in absolutely hold that there is a conscience that God built into the human being, that unlike animals, that's why we're in the image of God and not animals. We know right and wrong, and animals do not. You don't blame a dog for biting somebody. You don't blame them. And in my view, I don't praise them for making a moral choice if they help some kid out of a pond. That's what they do. It's instinct. We have moral choice. Obviously, then, if God held humanity wrong before the Ten Commandments, so obviously there must have been some expectation of right and wrong. However, if there is no God, murder isn't wrong. Whether it is right or wrong is solely a matter of personal opinion. The Nazis thought it was right. Prager thinks it's wrong. End of issue. If there's no God as the source of right and wrong, there is no right and wrong. It is the same as pretty and ugly.
All right. Still the best hope. The third item in the American Trinity, e pluribus unum, out of many, one. Quote, the cultural war in which America is engaged is in large measure about American exceptionalism. Conservative America generally believes in the concept, liberal America does not, close quote, with particular reference to this notion of out of many, one, as opposed to diversity. Explain this.
Well, there's a conflict. This is why I say leftism and Americanism are in diametric conflict.
Right.
Liberty versus equality, that is material equality, in God we trust versus a secular state, and e pluribus unum versus multiculturalism. We Americans, race, ethnicity, nationality, blood don't matter. Now, that
Excuse
doesn't
me,
mean...
Elizabeth Warren is 132nd Cherokee.
That's the claim.
She thinks.
That's her claim.
And
yes.
no less an institution than Harvard, Harvard University.
Well, this is the irony. The progressives have gone back to blood beliefs. The progressives are utterly reactionary. American values transcended blood. That doesn't mean Americans did. Many Americans believe blacks were inferior. It was despicable. But the American value system holds that it is irrelevant. If you could look up the great line from Saakashvili, the president of the Republic of Georgia that I have in there, mm-hmm. says, only in America. He said, the other week I was seeing some Americans working at an office, and I saw people from Africa, Asia, all over. But they all looked American. They all spoke American. They all had American body language. And he said, only in America. Try that anywhere else. It doesn't work.
All right. Segment 5, what is to be done? Your subtitle, still the best hope. Subtitle, why the world needs American values to triumph. Why the world
That's
needs
right.
American values. China, 1.3 billion people. How do you get them to adopt American values? What difference would it make? Apply your notion that the world needs American values to one big test
case. I explain in the book how the American Trinity is adaptable to every country. And not only do we not want others to abandon their religion or their national identity, we want them to affirm it. That's the beauty of the American value system. I want Chinese to feel Chinese. I want Hondurans to feel Honduran. That's the Europeans don't want French to feel French.
Right. They want to dissolve their identities.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
That because that's the left view that you have no identity. No identity is the best. I'm just a human being. But no, the American is e pluribus unum. The unum is as important as the e pluribus. One, you have one national identity. Nationalism is good if it comes with God and liberty.
Okay. So I have heard it said, and it sounds to me, strikes me as the best very brief summary of 3,000 years of Chinese history, that Mao eliminated Confucius, and then Deng eliminated Mao. And so you have 1.3 billion people who at this stage believe vaguely in some sense of national purpose, more concretely in material
Only.
Improvement.
That's right.
And otherwise...
That's correct.
Billion-three people
right.
whose value system is
well,
vague
just
and
as
flux.
In Russia, Lenin and Stalin eliminated orthodoxy.
Right.
And then you could use the same parallel. And then Khrushchev eliminated Stalin.
How do they proceed?
It's a big problem. There is a real nihilistic void in this world, and it's going to be filled with leftism, Islamism, or Americanism. And they're proselytizing, and we don't even know what we stand for. You can't sell what you don't know you own.
All right. Let's ask how we're doing with Islam. Bernard Lewis on the Arab Spring, quote, "The Muslim Brotherhood is a very dangerous, radical Islamic movement." You have to hear that on this show because you won't read it in the New York Times. "If it obtains power, the consequences could be disastrous," close quote. As we tape this program, one of the two finalists in the Egyptian presidential election is the candidate of the Muslim Brotherhood. How is the struggle against radical Islam going, Dennis?
Well, I wrote a piece which, among other places, National Review, where we both appear, put up my syndicated weekly column. It was a few weeks after the Arab Spring was announced in the New York Times and elsewhere. And I said 8 reasons why I am pessimistic about the Egyptian revolution. 8 reasons. They've all been valid, as it happens. Now, why was Tom Friedman, the foreign...
That's reason number one. If Friedman's for it, be pessimistic.
Well, the naivete, that's the point.
Oh, got it.
The left is naive. Because there were Twitter-using youth who loved liberty in Tahrir Square...
They did love liberty. That's real.
Yes,
they're trying to embrace
democracy.
But
who did they represent?
Yeah.
And by the way, embracing democracy is not loving liberty. Democracy and liberty are sometimes connected. You can vote in tyrants. You could vote in Sharia. Then you don't vote in. That's what they're doing when they vote for the Muslim Brotherhood. They're voting in Sharia.
So you are still pessimistic about the Arab Spring?
Yes.
What about Iraq?
Am I pessimistic about Iraq?
Yeah.
It's better than it was under Saddam Hussein.
Okay.
Oh, let me explain something when you say I support it.
You supported the President Bush and the war generally.
Once it started.
Got it.
I was ambivalent about going in.
Okay. American values here at home. American values in America. Dennis, a few statistics. Let me compare America in the early 1980s when you launched your radio career with the country today. In 1983, fewer than 1/3 of households received a monthly government check. Today, that figure stands at half. In 1980, 60% of American households featured a married couple, man and wife. Today, only 48%. Today, by the way, also the proportion of taxpayers who receive more from the federal government than they pay in the form of taxes stands at 70%. Dennis, it's too late. Leftism has already won. We have passed a tipping point. And you will cheer me by saying no, and here's why.
Well, Krauthammer said that the American DNA, it's funny because I talk about the DNA of the left as being totalitarian, which it is, the desire to control as much of our lives as possible, like Oregon telling schools that they can't have the word braves in the title. It's against the law now. Because it's, by the way, the Indian tribes in Oregon protested. I mean, that's the irony. But in any event, the American DNA, he said, is liberty. However, DNA is not the determinant of all of our behavior. Leftism is poisonous. It makes people who have good intentions do bad things and do corrosive things. So what, you want me to cheer you up?
Yes, please.
Okay, I will cheer you up. There are a lot of Americans today who understand the epic battle that we are in. That part of America is no longer lethargic, no longer takes America for granted. In the 50s, the assumption was, we're terrific, we're free, we'll always be free. Now we're realizing that's not true. Every generation has to reaffirm these values. That's why I wrote the book.
This book is to call
the
people who hold the American trend, the American values, to call them to consciousness, to rouse them, to wake them.
Yeah, to wake them and to tell them what it is. They don't know. I didn't know. I didn't know till 20 years ago this notion. If you'd said, Dennis, what are American values? I would have said, I would have given you a speech.
Apple pie.
Well, all sorts of, patriotism and love of country. And I probably would have said liberty, but I wouldn't have realized the Trinity and how they connect with one another. And I mean the American Trinity, obviously.
I just want to go back to one. I listed some depressing statistics, but we touched on this. It's still rolling around in my mind. What was the great book? You and I both grew up in New York. I think it was on the required reading list for Regents when you went through junior high and high school in New York State. To Kill a Mockingbird, I think it's still required reading in high schools across the country. And what is the great hero of To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus Finch, is struggling against identifying people on the basis of race. And we know that one of the things that was so pernicious about racism in the South was the one drop rule.
Mm-hmm.
At some level, doesn't it just drive you to a kind of despair to think that Harvard University publicized the notion that Elizabeth Warren was 1/32nd chair? That is a transmission of values from the scorned, small-town, old South to Harvard University in untransmuted form. It is simply a picking it up from here and dropping it down. It's madness.
It is. That's what I say. That the multicultural ideal is to undermine E Pluribus Unum. What does Jesse Jackson and others say? No, we don't believe in the melting pot. We're a quilt. No, we believed in the melting pot. Doesn't mean you gave up your identity. I live in a part of the L.A. area which is very largely Armenian. I've spoken at Armenian schools. I think that's lovely. I went to a Jewish school. I think that's lovely. But that doesn't mean I don't believe in a melting pot. The Armenian American and me, we're American.
Okay. Dennis, there is one place, I want to try this one on you, where American values are still respected, still acted upon. Listen for a moment. Longish quotation, but it makes an important point, and moreover, I want to see how you respond to it. This is Art Laffer and Stephen Moore writing recently in the Wall Street Journal, and they're writing about the heartland, the middle of the country. People are leaving workers' paradises such as Hartford, Buffalo, and Providence for Jacksonville, San Antonio, and Knoxville. Republican governors in Florida, Georgia, Idaho, North Dakota, South Carolina, Ohio, Tennessee, Wisconsin, and even Michigan and New Jersey are cutting taxes to lure new businesses and jobs. Georgia, Kansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma are now racing to become America's 10th state without an income tax. All of them want what Texas has, almost half of all new net jobs in America over the last decade. Overwhelmingly, they're talking about states in the middle of the country. And although they're talking about economic growth, these are also states where family formation is high, where religious observance is high, where in many cases they've passed an amendment to the state constitution, making sure that marriage remains one man and one woman.
Even California voted that way.
They voted that way and then had, of course, as you know in detail, had a judge under, all right. So here's the practical thing you have to do, Dennis. You need to leave L.A. and move to Dallas and just try to hold the heartland together until the rest of the country comes to its senses. That's really the best hope. What do you make of that?
I've thought about that.
Have you really?
Absolutely.
You're ahead of me again.
No, I'm not ahead of you, but I have definitely thought very seriously about that. Were it not for familial and friendship ties, I would leave California. I say it with sadness because I have loved it there. There are so many wonderful people there, but it has been ground into the ground, to be redundant, by the Democratic Party because it can do whatever it wants in every area of life, financially, socially, textbooks. So, yes, I agree. You know, I would love to do a swap. Let all the liberals go to New York and California. We'll go. No, I mean,
we'll give them the nice weather.
No, that's right.
Manhattan.
No, and that economy. You have a built-in great economy, and they did. The left had the most dynamic economy in America, California, and ruined it. It's because their ideas are bad. Their ideas are pernicious. They don't work. They don't work in Europe. What does it take for a leftist to wake up one day and say, it's not enough to mean well, you have to do well?
All right, last couple of questions. Still the best hope. Quote, the United States of America has a cure for moral cancer. Close quote.
That's right.
I want to know, I'm not asking you to predict the future exactly, but I want to know how optimistic you are.
I wish you didn't ask that, and I'm serious. The reason that I wish you didn't ask
you
it,
have kids. I mean, this is...
Yes, but even if I didn't have kids, all American kids are my kids in a certain sense, and I'm not being poetic. But the reason I wish you didn't ask it is that I don't like to think in those terms. This is the terms that I think in.
All right.
If we re-embrace the American value system, I am thoroughly optimistic. If we don't, I'm thoroughly pessimistic. So it comes with a big if. And that's why I waited 12 years since my last book, which was a bestseller on, of all subjects, happiness, which, by the way, is a very important subject for another time. And there's a reason, by the way, that conservatives are happier than liberals. And I have that in the book, because a very important little epilogue at the end of the leftist chapter, why are people on the left less happy? By the way, if you don't feel you command your own ship, you can't be as happy. That's the American value system says, I, Dennis, much rather fail and be free than be taken care of and never be allowed to fail.
Right.
But anyway, on the optimistic pessimistic, it's a big if. If we reaffirm the values, we will soar. If not, we're Greece.
Last question. I hereby assure you that you may give one sentence, but only one sentence, of advice to Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, and they will act on it. If I gave you that assurance, what sentence would you give to President Obama?
Well, you mean for him to win the presidency?
No.
Well, I would give the same advice. The bigger the government, the smaller the citizen. That's my motto.
To both of them.
To both of them. We are reduced. Our liberty is reduced. Our dignity is reduced. The bigger the government, I want to take care of my community. I want to take care of my family.
Okay. And then I keep saying last question. This truly is the last question. I just asked you for advice for the president and Governor Romney. You have a boy who's 29. You have a boy who's 19. This program, which appears on the web, is especially popular among college kids. And I am conscious that guys with hair our color can get a little pessimistic about the country, and we get up and walk off and get about our life. And the college kid, wait a minute. I have to find a career here. So to somebody who's beginning his life, what is your advice to that person?
That never, ever, ever, ever think that change in and of itself is good. Maybe, just maybe, there was wisdom in the founders of this country, and they offered us a recipe for a good life that still works.
Dennis Prager, author of Still the Best Hope, radio show phenomenon, and my friend, I'm happy to say, thank you for joining us.
It's really been an honor.
For Uncommon Knowledge, I'm Peter Robinson.